Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we'll get you caught up on what took place over the weekend. Ravi Patel's going to join us. Always funny. First,
we're back inside the toolbox. That's how you use a cowbell. This set of hits brought to you by Olive Garden. When you're here, Sean Hannity isn't. I found out this weekend there's a dude named The Weeknd, and apparently we all work for him on the toolbox.
Everyone's watching.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, from the HBO show, Ravi Patel's Pursuit of Happiness, Ravi Patel. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and a spirited round of the Rotten Tomatoes game. And now, he's outraged and appalled at the news that Sex and the City is coming back to HBO Max without Samantha. Adam Carolla.
Get it on? Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. Your mandate, you get it on now. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Bald Brian.
Hey, now.
Hey, Max Pat, I can't see these guys on my screen.
Honey, there won't be a Samantha on Sex and the City.
I just watched the entire first movie 3 nights ago.
It's good.
It is good. I love that series. They do a little that thing that they do in all those movies where, and I don't know if anyone's ever had this in real life, but you know, you're in love with somebody. She's in Sarah Michelle Parker Gellar.
Yeah, Jessica.
Is in love with Big, Mr. Yep. Big, right? But has there ever really been a situation where you're in love with somebody and then they do something? They do it in all these rom-coms from the 80s and 90s, these movies and stuff. And they screw up. And then at some point, they're chasing the person out of the restaurant or down the street of Manhattan going, I love you, come back. And the person goes, no, it's too late. Like, everyone I know would immediately stop, male or female, if you're
at
really
engaged in conversation.
Yeah. Like,
well, and yes, and the girl who has been wronged or perceivedly been wronged isn't the one saying it. Her best friend is. No, you get out of here. No, she's not going to hear it from you.
Yes, yes. Yes, that was the scene in the street when the wedding went south. But I mean,
this is the movie, right?
Yes. Well,
have you guys ever had this happens to me all the time. Have you guys ever had like a movie experience where early on or halfway through or somewhere in the midpoint there's a line of dialogue where you're like, I'm out on this movie. The movie needs to work now to pull me back in. I think it was the Sex and the City movie where Sarah Jessica Parker uttered, You don't go to Napa. Whatever version it was, I was like, I'm out on this movie. I was interested in initially, but not anymore.
For me, it was a woman's right to shoes.
Oh, shoes.
That's not bad. That's not that bad.
Well, I watch the whole thing anyway, so that's me. And, of course, we all know famously I went to Sex and the City 2 with the Jimmy and Company for my 45th birthday or whenever the hell it was. I like being a fun dad. I have, I will tell you a good example of fun dad and a thing, which is kind of a bygone era that, kids don't really experience anymore, but, they should. I had to turn in my, big Truckster Infiniti, big hunkin' Infiniti SUV. And I am now carless, but I'm
QX90. It was pretty big.
Yeah, like 80, I think is what it is. Or maybe it's a 90. QX80. The biggest one they make. It's a big old truckster, and I turned it in, and I have no backup in the truckster department, but I do have a 370Z, which is a miniature little car with a 6-speed manual transmission. And I thought
that's the one Sonny drove, right?
Yeah. So I was like, well, I'll drive this car for a little while. And I was sitting at home last night, probably about 9 o'clock, and I got the call from my daughter, and she was like, can you come to Annie's house and pick us up? And I said, well, who do we got? And she said, it's me and Annie and two other girls. There's four of us. I said, oh, yeah, well, here's the deal. I have a 2-seater sports car, and there is a hatch, but the back has a big bar going across it from the shock tower to the other shock tower to try to stiffen it up for performance reasons.
Anyway, so, you coming to get us or not?
Yeah.
That's what
she said. Blah, blah, blah.
I said, I don't have the truckster, so I don't know. I think you're going to have to get some other parent to drive you home. And she said, we'll fit in. We'll make it in. And I said, all right.
That's a can-do attitude.
Well, if you'll make it in, then I'll come get you. So then she called back and she said, the parents want to know if you want to come in and say hi. And then I said, I'm in my bathrobe. So probably not.
So here I am.
And then she called back and said, they don't care if you're in your bathrobe. Oh, and I said, yeah, I do. So I'll just come pick you up. So I went, and this is up in the hills, up in the windy, dark hills. And I got in there and I pulled the Z in there, and there were four girls standing out on the curb. And this car is miniature, man. I mean, it's tight for me to drive alone. Like,
technically a back seat?
No, there's no back seat. It's just a flat, you know, luggage compartment and a hatch. And like I said, the hatch has a bar going right across the middle of it, right to left, where the two shock towers are, just to add some more rigidity to it. So I said, all right, here we are. So I pulled up and popped the hatch. And the hatch is very low slung. When you shut the hatch, it's snug back there. Two of the girls crawled into the back, and I shut the hatch on them. And it was like when you pile spaghetti into a Tupperware and it's coming over the top of it a little bit, and you push it. You have to kind of push it down, and you can.
It's going
to
come out somewhere.
Yeah, perfect. You can see it pressing against the glass. So no room. And then the other two girls piled into the front. They just sort of double decked it on the passenger seat. And then I said, "All right, well, let's make it home." So I started to go home, but then I realized, you know, this is a 6-speed. It's a performance car.
Oh,
so I think I'll get into it a little bit. So I got into it a little bit, and they all fucking squealed and went nuts. Sure. They're all like, whoa! And they're just going, they're going bananas. And it was that great thing that really only young people have, which is, slow down, slow down, slow down, more, more, more. I think later you have it sexually, but as a child, you only have it as it pertains to the automobile. Yep. So they were like screaming, like slow down, and then every time it slowed down a little, they'd yell, they'd scream for more, and I was just, you know, maybe redlined it in second gear and chirped it into third, going, but you know what? None of them have ever experienced driving a manual stick shift car.
No.
And I don't mean like everyone kind of does the how do you drive a manual, but it's not the how do you drive a manual. When you're a passenger in a manual shift car and someone is driving it aggressively, you get pinned back in your seat. Like you really feel it as it goes from first into second gear, especially if you tack it up. So we had a good time doing that. And also they don't have a real context. They just think it's the fastest car in the world. And we're
great.
Going a million miles an hour
awesome.
And it's
Let
all
them.
That, all that good time stuff. So that was last night. Also, I
Count
went
down to the angry phone call.
I was just going to ask exactly what I was thinking.
My daughter said you didn't strap her in the seatbelt, let alone put her in a seat.
you know, if you don't want to throw the kids in the minivan and truck them down to my house, then you get what you get. That's my take. Then before that, I went to the West Side and did a stand-up show, which I really had no idea what it was. There's a stand-up venue, which isn't a stand-up venue. It's just a business with a kind of a parking lot. Well, I wouldn't call it
a not very many stand-up venues out here.
Where? What part of town?
Pico in the 405.
Buddy, you're right by my house. You should stop by and said hi. You're going to walk there.
Yeah, I figured I'd wait till tonight. No, but I do love that Annawalt.
You know what I'm talking about. I'm Pico.
Oh, yeah. Although Annawalt has been replaced. They got bought by... I think they got
this
bought by
Annawalt.
Somebody. Oh, it's still Annawalt?
No. This one is, yeah. Osh switched over to something. But anyway, we're getting the weeds.
All right. So it's a business, like an office, and it has a kind of patio in the back, a medium, large-sized patio with a fence around it. And everyone was just sitting there in beach chairs with a cooler in front of them.
How were people notified about this show? Is this like a private thing or
Smart and Final Adventure 16? I gotta know where in my neighborhood you are.
I was
like a pop up.
Pico south of 405, just south.
Perpendicular into the 405, so it would have been either east or west.
Oh, sorry, west, I guess of the 405.
Yeah,
on Pico, and it's just this little fenced off area and this little sort of patio parking lot, and people had folding chairs with like blankets on their laps and coolers, and they were sitting there smoking weed and cigarettes and drinking beer.
Jesus. I
was gonna say, never heard of it.
I don't know what it was either. I don't even know how it worked, but they probably had five or six comedians. Everyone did like 15-20 minutes, and all outdoors, but it couldn't comply with anything that I've... Let's see.
You got lucky because today was actually a really nice day out here.
You're looking at Thursday. This was Saturday, Max Zapata. But, I don't know how it worked, but either way, it was interesting. I don't know what it was. I don't know if they're going to get into trouble. I don't know how it works. I don't know.
So what? They did it.
Yeah, they just did it. So they're... There is a little bit of underground bootleggy whatever going on out there. And
who are the other comics?
I don't know. Max Zapata's got to go look it up now. I can't remember. I was just kind of in and out. I show up to most things not really knowing what we're doing or where I am or how it works.
Sure.
But, you know, it frees my brain up to think about other things. So that was last night.
Sounds fun.
I was talking to Dr. Drew on the way in. He's on the mend. He's doing okay. He brought something up, which is interesting. He said a number of people reached out to him and wanted to know if he was scared, which it's a weird thing to ask someone, like, are you scared? I would argue it's a breach of etiquette to ask someone if they're scared, but
you can ask if they were scared, if they are scared.
Right. But no, Drew was never scared because Drew said, not prostate cancer. That's something I should be scared of, but not COVID, because statistically much higher probability of him perishing with prostate cancer than with COVID. But I was also sort of explaining it's kind of the death of math that we always talk about. And then also the birth of narcissism meets the death of math. And then we were talking about how you can't do the math if you're in the equation, pardon the pun. So when you factor yourself in, now math is out the window. And then I said something interesting, which is whenever I'm at the beach, whenever I'm around the ocean, I go into the ocean every single time, rain or shine, doesn't matter. I'm in the water. And I said, you know, the number one answer for people who don't want to go into the ocean, in my experience, the number one answer that I have gotten over the years from the people who are just like, I don't want to go in the ocean, I'm not going in the ocean. Mm-hmm. It's not temperature. It's not the waves. It's not bacteria in the water. Number one answer I get is sharks. Sharks.
You're not going to
get
bit by a shark.
That's the number one answer.
Very, very small chance.
It's not even, yeah, it's barely small, almost not even countable. But that is kind of the answer. When you talk to many people and talk to them about why they do not want to go in the ocean, they go, sharks. And I realize that is the death of math, but it's also the birth of narcissism, because that's you being bitten by a shark.
Because you're just so delicious, so succulent.
So marbled.
Because if you just do the math on sharks and shark attacks, then there's nothing there. But if you do the math on me in shark mm-hmm. attacks, now there's a math issue. So I thought that was interesting, the kind of, and if you think about all those sort of abduction Nancy Grace shows with all the kids being abducted and all that kind of stuff, that's all narcissism. It's not math. The math of your kid being abducted is nil, but it's your kid and it's you, and now there's the death of math. Right.
Well, you call it narcissism. I call it a public servant. But, you know, we're going to agree to disagree on this one, like always.
But Nancy, you understand what you're doing isn't a public service. You're scaring the shit out of moms across the country needlessly.
I can't be responsible for people's reaction to these horrific abductions that could happen in anywhere town. In your town, it probably happened 3 times last week. You just didn't know because you're too busy fixing cars and telling knock-knock jokes.
I don't really tell knock-knock jokes, but could you maybe you...
Knock-knock!
Who's there?
An abductor gonna snatch your kids right out of their beds!
That's not even a joke, but okay, but... here's a question, Nancy. Could you provide some soothing words to a lot of the moms who are unduly panicked about having their kids abducted? And in a way, it's sort of like California and Los Angeles County shutting down all the schools. We think we're doing it in the name of safety, but we're really hurting the kids. Statistically, there's no reason why they can't be back at school, but we're really harming the kids by forcing them to be at home.
So, well, to be fair, there is nothing wrong with always having eyeballs on those youngins, because if they're not in school, they're going to be in your house learning the good book. Learning about when dinosaurs and humans roam the earth together, and you got eyes on them, and they're not gonna get abducted.
I didn't realize Nancy Grace was a
flat
creationist. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot you don't know about me.
Obviously.
Well, Nancy, maybe you could just provide a little kind of PSA explaining to the young moms that their kids are not gonna statistically be abducted.
Hi, I'm Nancy Grace, and I know in the past I've said some things that might have gotten you a little startled, a little jarred, a little jumpy about your kids being snatched from their beds at night. But I'm here to tell you that that's probably not going to happen to you, because you're a good mom. You're a smart mom. You got those 14 alarm sensors on little Jimmy and little Julie's door. You got them tied to the bedpost at night. So it's going to take the robber a little extra time to get them. And by the time they do, you're going to be standing over their bed with a shotgun, making sure that they don't take Jimmy and Julie. So you're a good parent. You got nothing to worry about. You're just fine. This is Nancy Grace.
Thank you, Nancy. Nice. Max Patti, I have a video of me being interviewed at Long Beach Grand Prix in 2002.
Well, you know, you're buckling up and a lady sticks her head in
that far. Yep, yeah, that one. Good. I want to see that, sorry.
I was right for the rest.
Appreciate it.
Can you hear it?
Yeah.
Am I going to go fast?
Who are the people? Let me ask you this. It's usually kids, but who are the people who come around you moments before you do something and go, are you freaked out? Are you scared?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not scared.
Scared. Well, I'd be scared. Are you scared?
Yeah, I'm
scared.
I'm
are you scared? I'm nervous. You'd be nervous.
So
am I nervous?
If I were you, I'd be freaking out.
What is that? Is there no decorum whatsoever?
Just put a little more sweat
on it. Yeah, my uncle died in a race.
Yeah. It's celebrity race, actually.
You need
one? Adam, you're very funny. And good luck to you.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, she hightailed it right after that.
Yeah. Are you scared? The fucking race is about to begin. Are you scared?
That's good.
By the way, did I win that goddamn race? Yeah. I think I did in 2012. Good.
Yeah.
No.
Is that Keanu?
Never scared. Although, you're a lot of things, but scared doesn't really... It doesn't help in your performance, I would say. I know it's hard to avoid if that's the way you're feeling, but it...
You can be anxious, you can be excited, but yeah, fear isn't going to...
My fear is always failure. It's not really a fear of injury or a feeling of I'm going to get hurt or killed or whatever. It's a performance fear. When I did a professional Trans Am race, it was a big, scary car and a big, scary track and everything else. My number one fear was making an ass out of myself. It wasn't being hurt. It was making a fool of myself. Like, I was scared that I would go out there and not be able to compete.
Along those lines, when I did the fundraiser last year, a year and a half ago, whatever it was, similarly, I was afraid of being afraid. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to get up there and like start shaking or stuttering or you know, voice cracking or whatever. Like, it was more the fear of fear. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
that's a snowball effect.
I completely concur. Let's see. Casket Steve from Kentucky's got a question. Casket Steve from Kentucky.
Hello, all. Nice to talk to you.
Hi, guy.
My question, I saw this guy on a video on TikTok, and he was hitting a speed bag, and he was talking about how, you know, I can do it at this speed, and I can do it at this speed, and then he just went through a bunch. It was pretty impressive because he was an old guy, but it just made me wonder, what does that have to do with boxing? So what's the purpose of a speed bag?
The rhythm thing? What is it?
The thing about a speed bag is it's not really boxing form at all. It's kind of you hit it going forward, and then you hit it with the back of your hand, then you hit it with the front of your hand, then you hit it with the back of your hand. Or there's another one where you just kind of hit it with the side of your hand. It makes a great sound. It lets everyone in the gym know you're badass because it's like, blah, 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 blah. It's like you really get that thing going. I guess sort of rhythm. It's kind of, I guess, like what's jump rope have to do with boxing? You know, it's also kind of a vestige of the past. I would be surprised. As a matter of fact, in all the MMA shows and all those MMA shows where they show the guy and he's doing his preparation, he's got those big ropes he's swinging back and forth and the truck tire, and they show him grappling and they show him sparring, they show him hitting the heavy bag, they show him hitting the focus pads. They never show the speed bag anymore, and I never see the speed bag anymore. So if you go to any MMA gym where you go, well, that's MMA, but MMA does a lot of striking, a lot of boxing. They have boxing coaches. They train in striking and boxing. I think the speed bag has gone the way of the dodo. I
thought of this like the shake weight. Like, it was just the repetitive motion, where the micro movement, you know what I mean, for muscle, for your wrist muscles or forearm or whatever.
Yeah, it's fine. You just have to think of all the things you could be doing in that time period that would probably have a more practical application toward striking. And the speed bag really doesn't have that. And I think it's gone the way of the dodo, because you do not see that. If you watched any footage of any Muhammad Ali era fighter or prize fight from Sugar Ray Leonard or something, they always had that thing where they're going nuts on the speed bag. You know, they're doing that whole thing.
Right.
You don't see it anymore. They don't show it in the clip.
Did you ever learn it?
Yeah, I did it. I was okay at it. I could do it. It wasn't my strong suit, but it was fine. I was fine at it. It just didn't. It also the speed bags, the hanging of the speed bag in gyms, and maybe this is why they got rid of it. Nothing shakes loose faster than them mounting that thing onto the wall. It's as if you hung a mirror in your house, and every day you just shook it for 4 hours. You know what I mean? Just like
it's only
shook
so it. Long before.
Yeah, it's just it works yes. its way loose, and the speed bags themselves, they lose their air. And then once they lose a little air, they don't bounce back and they're no good. And there's no action on them. And it's just one of those things. A lot of guys bring their own speed bag and they just screw this big kind of universal screw up in there. But yeah, it's kind of gone the way it's kind of what happened to the manual shift automobile. It's kind of gone the way of the Dodo. Christine, 38, Ventura, California.
Hi.
Hi, guy. Hi, gal.
Thank you for gendering me properly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I've actually been listening to you since you were on Loveline.
Wow. You must have been
yeah.
young
freaking
babe.
Old.
Yeah. Were you listening in high school?
Yeah, I was.
Maybe even junior high.
A little bit.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so my question actually kind of pertains to, you know, what we're dealing with now with this mass censorship and, you know, private industry being the, you know, the gods that they are and being able to dictate what we can and cannot say. And, you know, I feel that Trump is going to be fine with all of this because he can go on and create his own platform and he can do whatever the hell he wants. But for the rest of us who are peons who don't have that kind of money, what do we do? Where do we go? You know, do we start knocking on Elon Musk's door and ask him to provide us with something because we trust him a little bit more than we trust the other guys with all the money? You know, where do we go from here?
I think we're basically fine, but I do think that a lot of these places, your Twitters or Facebooks, I think, and to some degree, kind of what happened with the Oscars and other places, other entities where they've kind of picked a direction, they picked a side, they've gone down that road. I think it's going to hurt their business. I think it's going to give birth to other businesses, like something like Parler is probably going to. You know, the best thing that ever happened to Parler, which is sort of an alternative to Twitter, is Twitter started getting selective about what they would have say and what they wouldn't have said. And I really feel like it's a very short-term business plan for them. Like, I would prefer it, obviously, if everything just opened up and people could voice their opinion on everything and they weren't in charge of deciding what's dangerous or misinformation. There's going to be misinformation. I think people should get used to misinformation. You want to process all information. I mean, your whole life is basically information and misinformation. Mm-hmm. Every single person I know who's successful, and especially in the business, will tell some story about someone telling them, you know, their school counselor or their stepdad, you're never going to make it as a comedian. You're never going to make it as an actor. You're never going to make it as a fill in the blank. You should go to work at the DMV or whatever. In a way, that's misinformation and you have to process it. And there's always going to be, I mean, think about misinformation. Think about the fucking food pyramid for the last 40 years. You want to talk about misinformation?
Yeah.
The government puts out a food pyramid with grains at the very top of the food pyramid and, you know, meat and poultry.
Bottom, at the widest.
Oh, sorry. Grains dairy. At the widest and then, you know, meats at the top. There's misinformation all over the fucking place. We're going to have to just start calibrating ourselves to process information. Yes.
I don't have the answer. I'll just say that much like the food pyramid, that's a great example that got us to where we are today, i.e. with just obesity being at an all-time high in this country, et cetera, et cetera. There's no secret that these things are connected, obviously. The misinformation, you're right. I think smart people can divine what's information, what's misinformation, but someone who can't divine, like, that got us to where we are today. You know, people storming the Capitol, like, misinformation led to that. So I don't think it's as easy as, we got to know misinformation from information. I agree with you, but we can't count on everyone in our society having that divining rod in their brain.
Well, they're not. But it's then the question becomes, do you then censor because people don't have that ability? You know, and then
I'm not advocating for an answer either way.
But here's the big problem. The big problem is who is deciding what's misinformation? You know, they decided doctors that talked about hydroxychloroquine is misinformation. Who gets to decide that? Is it dangerous? Yeah. Who decides it's dangerous? It's not dangerous, but who decides it's dangerous? Right. That's the slippery slope part of the not really the misinformation. It's the who is the gatekeeper, who decides,
who labels it misinformation,
who labels it dangerous and misinformation. That's
and what are their
the problem.
Well, you know, what does Jack Dorsey know that the rest of us don't know that makes him so qualified to tell us what the hell we're allowed to hear? Or see?
Well, look, the deal is this. The information is out there. There's people that say there's flat earth information. There's 9/11 is a hoax information. There's information. There's, never had a moon landing information. There's Cam Newton is a Hall of Fame quarterback information. There's a lot of information out there. You are going to have to start. Everyone is going to have to start calibrating themselves. That's what I'm saying.
That'd be nice.
And as a little front tease, this is going to be a big news story today that I have regarding Parler and there's a new Parler and there's some big news behind that.
Yeah, I think if I was a shareholder in Twitter or some of these other online or some of these other, some of these other informational venues, I would hope that they would just kind of step back and do a little less editing, because I think you're going to give birth to these other alternative vehicles to give the, like Parler and things like that. I don't know what the new one is.
But they're kind of, I mean, and maybe this is just the perception of it. Maybe it's not totally like this, but it seems like they've been in a very damned if you do, damned if you don't, because Twitter got a lot of shit and so did Facebook and all these others for not protecting people who are getting doxxed and who are, getting bullied off the site and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, okay, we hear you. We'll put in some restraints. And people are like, well, now we're all handcuffed. Right. So what do you do as the guy on top? I don't know.
I think the problem with Twitter and a lot of these other places is they took a sort of political stance. And that's the thing that bumps a lot of people. They took a stance politically versus a kind of a neutrality of all bump. We'll clip someone on the right. We'll clip someone on the left. We'll do, you take something like COVID. We'll do the right version and the left version. They kind of took a stance. And I think that's what's bumped. Well, half the country, I will say. But either way, it's fine. It'll mean that other companies and other entities will fill that void. That's how we work. That's fine. That's good. That's what we should be doing. All right.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Grauman's Chinese Theater? Sounds kind of racist and problematic. Tear it down and get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Ravi Patel is on, probably somewhere in North Hollywood near my dad's old house, if memory serves, and just off the park over there. Netflix series. Now, tell me if I get this right. Pog Beanie Pog?
No. But I thought that was a good effort. Yeah. Bog Beanie Bog, which I think was close.
Chris just told me it was Pog Beanie
Pog. I don't know.
Pog,
in all the videos when I saw people it. Say it, it's
I feel like you put a P in it.
I did because fucking Chris just told me to do it.
I'll show you the videos where they say it.
What the fuck are you putting a P in there for, Chris?
But I said it's pronounced B. It has BH in the letters, but every time I say it, they go Pog Beanie Pog.
Fucking Chris. Let's get rid of Chris.
Oh, he's already angry.
I am very angry right now. I'm not going to lie. I'm in a horrible mood.
Oh, your Bears. Your Bears. Yeah.
I'm fucking angry. I'm like, I was like, this was such a fucking mistake. I'm definitely drunk and I am in such a bad mood. My wife came in and started talking about, I don't know what the fuck. And I was like, you have to leave. Like, you can't talk to me right now. What do you, I can't do so, this.
The Bears were hapless today.
Yeah.
Well, they're hapless in general. It's one of the worst run companies in America. I'm so fucking sick of it. And I was glad they lost in the sense that people need to get fired. The problem is a lot of people aren't going to get fired. It's everything that's wrong with America is wrong with the fucking Bears, in my opinion.
Explain.
They're Peter Prince pulling it.
The wrong people. What's the Peter Prince?
You fail to your level of success. As long as you maintain, like, you know, a certain level of competence, you'll never get fired, basically.
Well, it's not. I like the Peter principle. I don't think that applies here. I think the problem is that the Bears are poorly run as a business. They make horrible decisions. But the people who get blamed usually are the ones who are on the field. So, for example, our quarterback, who's not good, is going to get blamed. Our coach, Matt Nagy, who's not good, is going to get blamed. But really, it's the GM, this guy named Ryan Pace, who has made some of the dumbest decisions. I mean, I don't know how much you guys follow this shit, but like complete idiots. And then his president, who supports everything and makes all the money moves. We had like 11 tight ends at one point this offseason. I mean, they're just idiots.
You guys all right, a couple things. Here's an interesting thought experiment. You guys have the best uniforms in professional football. So you got that working for you. Number one. Number two, do you, everyone but Gina, do you think that it hurts the team when they have a guy like Khalil Mack? And let me explain. Khalil Mack is a great defensive player, but he looks even more menacing than he is. He has huge arms with a big vein in it, you know, and he just he looks like a video, like they created a video game, like a defender on a video game, right? And then they do this. They go, the high flying Saints are coming to town this week, but they're going against Khalil Mack and the Bears. And it's like, he's not a prize fighter. There's 11 guys on that fucking defense. He's good for half a sack a game. He's good for half a sack and four run stops a game. It doesn't mean the other team's not going to score 31 points. You know, look, they got Khalil Mack. He look at him patrolling the defensive side with Khalil Mack. They just run away from him most plays. He doesn't, he's not that impactful. He looks totally impactful and they'll do it every time. They'll go, Tom Brady and his high-scoring offense are squaring up against Khalil Mack. And it's like, Khalil Mack's not enough to do anything. They'll double-team him. They'll throw the ball deep, and they'll score. But is having one outstanding defensive player, does that kind of fuck it up? Because they always show him. He looks awesome in his uniform, and they go, but they're going to have to deal with Khalil Mack. And you go, oh, yeah, that's right. They may not win. They got Khalil Mack on the other side. He's one guy.
Same thing, I mean, Brian Urlacher back in the day.
Right.
Yeah, but the other side of it, which I've seen, I feel like, firsthand with the Bears, because, you know, I've been obsessed with them for my whole life. And what you notice is in any great sports team, one great player really does rise the entire tide. You see all the players step up to their level, and all of a sudden the entire defense is great. And you're seeing so many people on the Bears who in other places – probably didn't even have much of a career or all of a sudden some of the best at their position.
But they just hung 28 points on them and Khalil Mack didn't get a sack. So how much did he do?
He was on the field for like 3.5 quarters. The guy's tired. Did you watch the game? It was fucking awful, man. It was,
it's hard to watch when you get to the playoffs and one team literally can't get a first down. It's like, it's kind of depressing. Yeah. You're like, you guys had all fucking season to work this shit out. You can't complete a pass longer than 9 yards. I don't know what the final, what was it, 28-3 or something?
It was 21-9. They got a garbage time touchdown at the end. Yeah. And Ravi, I got you back on this one because the Bears defense actually played okay. They had 7-3 at halftime. They just broke their back. You know what I mean? They put them in so many bad positions with all the punts and everything.
Oh, it was just horrible, horrible play calling. That third down, I don't want to get into the details. I don't feel like you guys care, but just some of the, it's just so frustrating.
Did Khalil Mack have a sack?
Yeah, let's look.
He played really well. He definitely had one tackle for a loss that I can remember
I had
yeah,
one
he had a sack. No, he had that sack on Drew Brees, unless that was called back, but he did have a sack.
Who looks better in their uniform on defensive side of the ball than Khalil Mack?
He had one tackle and one assist.
Oh, you know what? There's this guy, Tashawn Gibson. He looks great in the uniform. Number 38. He's got kind of these high, old school shoulder pads. By the way, this is I just went and relapsed after this game. I haven't done this in months. I hope my wife doesn't walk in because she said she'll tell my mom.
Are you dipping?
Are you chewing?
Yeah, I'm back, and that's how guys. I don't know what to tell you. I'm really upset right now. By the way, I'm in Nashville right now. That might be part of it.
You are.
You moved, right?
Oh, that's right.
So last we spoke, I was telling you that we were going to go to all these cities to go test drive. So we're in Nashville right now. We're in this. We went house hunting all day today. We're renting in this neighborhood that is like straight out of like Desperate Housewives or the Truman Show. Like it's all houses with front porches. You can definitely tell there's a lot of orgies and stuff like underneath it all.
Sweet.
But it's like the best neighborhood, and like kids everywhere, bikes. There's the school's in the middle of the neighborhood. It's got its own little grocery store, golf carts.
Just out of curiosity, because I've never been, and I would love to go to Nashville and Memphis and that whole area. What's the diversity situation? I would imagine it's getting more, but I don't know.
So the neighborhood that I'm renting in right now, which is called West Haven, which I think is kind of known nationally as one of the kind of coolest, community, like lifestyle neighborhoods where everything's all inclusive. Someone told me the nickname here is White Haven. I mean, it is the whitest place. I played pickleball yesterday which is probably white, with this dude, and he was Mexican. And I was like, oh, dude, there you are. How's it going? And I was like, oh, I actually think we're going to buy in this other neighborhood because I don't think I can do this. And he's like, no, I was so excited to see you. But so like here, it's really super white. But then there's this other neighborhood that we're only looking in the suburbs, like Franklin and Southern Area College Grove. It's super diverse over there.
How much is a home there?
Oh, dude, you would not. It's amazing. West Haven's like one of the more expensive places because you're basically living in a country club. And so you can get, I would say you hover around 300 a square foot here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, and super small lots. But then, this other place I'm looking at, we're going to land really close to like 225 a square foot. So I'm going to get like a huge, like the house that we're talking about doing there is going to be, 4,500 square feet. It's probably going to be on like a third to a half an acre, and it'll be like $850,000-$900,000.
That's nice. The new favorite pastime for everyone who moves out of LA is they go, dude, I want out just a little outside of New Orleans in Louisiana, just a little bit outside, $250,000. I got 7 acres. The place comes with slaves. I swear to God, it's awesome. It's awesome. They tell you all the fucking, it's got a bowling alley with slaves. It's insane when you live in LA. Yeah. I don't know what happened to LA, and I'm not sure what happened to price. I've lived in LA my entire life. Mm-hmm. The house I grew up in, which is close to your old house on Houston Street, mm-hmm. by Colfax.
Which I'd love to look at pictures at again, by the way.
Houston really and Colfax.
Yeah.
$10,000. $10,000 for that house when my grandma bought it. And then the house she bought was, the other house she bought was like $12,000 and on Wilkinson in North Hollywood. And the house my dad bought in North Hollywood was $14,000. Now, there were pieces of shit, but these are still... The house my dad bought in like 1975 was like $14,000. Like, I don't know what the fuck happened. And who do we blame? Is it the industry? Is it the film industry? Like, what? How did the prices go so fucking ballistic in Los Angeles?
Well, so I was actually I'm thinking about doing a documentary about this because it's really interesting, the kind of mass migration. So there used to be a mass migration to cities. Mm-hmm. So that is the answer to your question. But now what's happening over the last 2 years or so, and it was accelerated by the pandemic, is you're seeing a mass migration to what's called secondary cities. So, Austin's the most popular. That's been happening for like 10 years. But then like Nashville, which I think is the new Austin. Then there's places like I don't know, Tampa or Raleigh, Durham, people are moving there in droves. And it's because the prices got so out of control in these big cities. And also people are realizing that they don't necessarily, especially the pandemic revealed this, don't have to be there really in the big cities.
Be in the office, yeah.
Yeah, and everyone's kind of values are, I think people are like, if you think about like mindfulness and yoga, like all these things align with a general, like people are really seeking out a way to de-stress and also find more community. And the evolution of the American community has been such that like in the 50s, 60s, people were in their front yards, they all kind of knew each other. They were dependent on each other to some degree. And now because of apps and you don't need a ride to the airport. You don't need to borrow anything. You don't see your neighbors anymore. People are in their backyard and people are lonely and there's more depression. And I don't know. I didn't mean to give a TED talk on this, but
easy, buddy. I know your Bears lost, but come
I'm
on.
Not tilt, man. This is y'all's fuck up. I'm sorry.
Well, also, didn't you curse the Tennessee Titans as well?
Yeah.
You did? The Titans? You didn't like
you
them?
You did. You did. I mean,
we're in town.
You bring failure to every city you go to.
I'll tell you what. I did curse them because I am on the worst gambling slump of my life. And if I bet on someone, I'm like today, I lost on every bet I had. And I should have also. And the Titans were one of them. So, yeah, you're right. I cursed them.
Last time we spoke, we were going on a kind of psychological journey. And people found it very interesting, so I'd like to maybe continue going down that path.
You want to talk about our feelings?
We want to talk about our feelings. I want to give a was it Pursuit of Happiness available now on HBO Max?
That's right.
Yeah, let's talk about that again. What did that entail?
So Pursuit of Happiness is on HBO Max. In every episode, I travel with someone in my life. And we're trying to answer some big question. And all of those big questions basically came out of things that I was discussing in therapy. That's literally how I prioritized which big questions to tackle. And then we went to countries that were addressing those questions in interesting ways. So in the first episode, I went to Mexico to one of the hottest retirement communities with my parents. That episode's about retirement and aging. I went to Japan with my wife, Mahaley. And that episode's about parenting and overparenting, which is something that my wife and I are constantly kind of debating and fighting about between the two of us. We went to Japan for that. Went to South Korea. That episode was on workaholism. I went there with one of my best friends who, like me, is an entrepreneur. And then went to Denmark. That episode was about refugees and immigration. So it was meant to be like a comedic attempt at serious questions in life.
It's funny, you were talking a few moments ago about wellness and yoga and mindfulness and that kind of stuff. And it strikes me that Los Angeles, kind of maybe the Bay Area, maybe Manhattan, kind of the epicenter of mindfulness and yoga and wellness and meditation and all that kind of stuff. But I also realize that that's kind of a substitute for the real happiness, which is sort of engagement, like you talked about, the neighbors, projects, movement. There is no substitute for sweating and moving and projects and a day laid out. I mean, for me personally, if you give me nothing to do all day, my mood will get bad fast. And if you give me something to do, I don't know that my mood will get good. I won't be thinking about my mood. Like, in a weird way, the mindfulness and the yoga and the meditation, it's you're already digging yourself a trap because, like, you're saying to yourself, I've got to be mindful. Like, I must break away from
this. It's another task.
It's like when you say, I laugh about it all the time, but whenever you make the proclamation like no desserts, no more desserts, no more masturbation, no more eating dessert and masturbating, it's like
definitely not at the same time.
How long before you're either beating off or eating a hot fudge sundae? Like, it's like literally you going, I must be mindful. I must break away. I must find peace. I must find inner peace. The second you do that, you're kind of admitting you don't have peace. Kind of saying, I need this versus go out and plow a field. You know what I mean? Just go fix something. Get up and go have a project.
what would you say that you're generally like, do you do any of those things? Would you say that you're a pretty happy person? Because if you get bored being by yourself, having nothing to do, that makes me think you're not so happy. There, I'm getting into this. Like, there you go. I did it. We're doing it.
Yeah. I am capable of amazing feats of motivation and lethargy. Like today, nobody has the kind of range. Like today, it was football Sunday. You know, next weekend, I'm going on the road. I'm doing a bunch of shows, blah, blah, blah. I was literally in my bathrobe with a beer in the pocket of my bathrobe, trying to remember if I took the over or the under gambling with my son on a football game. Like it was literally fucking zero burger today. Just literally a beer in my hand the whole day, took a nap, and then decided when I woke up I needed ice cream. Took a nap and woke up and like, you know what? I burned so few calories taking that nap. I need some ice cream now. Like a bowl of ice cream with a beer at 2 in the afternoon. Took my bathrobe off to put on gym shorts to come to this show tonight. Like, that's this the only like reason joy. I'm out.
What are you describing? This sounds like pure joy to me. This is unhappiness.
At some point, I looked up at the clock and it was starting to get dark outside. Like, it was like 4:15. The shadows were starting to fall. And I'm like, I have been in my fucking bathrobe the entire day, buzzed with ice cream on my chin. And I felt like, what the fuck did I do?
USA!
Also, you know,
it's a win.
Also, there's a problem. My home is right at the beginning of a trail where everyone mountain bike rides and rides horses and shit. So when I look out the window, it's a bunch of guys on mountain bikes going, come on, dude.
Just shaming you.
Oh, a guy.
You gotta put foil over the window.
A fucking guy did this move today. Rode the mountain bike with a lot of pace up to the front of the trail, but there's a steep hill. Jumped off the mountain bike, threw the mountain bike on his shoulder, and started running up the fucking hill with the bike. And I was like trying to figure out whether I was going to take a hit off the ice cream or the beer while I was watching him in my bathroom.
Fuck that guy.
That's what I said. I said, fuck that guy. But I will then hit the ground running during the week and be super productive. So I guess the moral is allow yourself to do that.
Yeah, you need to do that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you sound, would you say that you're happy? Do you go to get therapy and all that shit? You said you're a therapy.
Yeah, guy, I am. I really don't calculate happy. Like, happy is kind of an interesting, it's sort of a luxury. I just like being content and kind of even, you know, not anxious, not whatever, regretful, not what have you. I rarely think in terms of being happy. I just think in terms of being sort of content. You know,
that makes sense. It's like the mindfulness thing you said, that like if you pay too much attention to it, you're likely to just be, unhappy. If you pay attention to happiness, it can lead to like the, just you're scrutinizing it too much.
Yeah.
Like, would you say that you're happy in all the main relationships that you have in your life? Because to me is pure, like, it's like I love my wife. We're pretty great generally. We have the normal marriage stuff like anyone else, but like, and I feel pretty good about my friendship. So that's to me is a measure.
Yeah, I would say yes to that. So
that's great then. How are things with your daughter? Because last time we talked,
my daughter and I are doing pretty
she's
well.
She's in the trunk of his car.
She's, I drove her, we've been driving. So that's the thing that she's into. You know, we've been going out and driving at night. And
you're
she's
teaching
been,
her?
Yeah, I'm teaching her how to drive.
Oh, that's the best.
So it's kind of nice. Kind of nice to get a little older and they can kind of learn things and appreciate things. And so we've been going out and doing that. And like, in general, good. But I do worry. Like, think about the people you know who are most into the self-help books and the mindfulness and all that stuff, like, to get their head right.
Yeah.
They seem like oftentimes the least happy people.
Oh, I totally agree.
The people
They're chasing it.
Yes. The longer I live, the more I realize you need a passion and you need an engagement, you know, and you need to get up and you need purpose. Like you need to get up and go, I have to do this thing today. I have to take care of these people. I have to take care of this thing at work. Like I just need engagement. And
what's your purpose?
My purpose, or the way I, at least I perceive it, and I don't really ever think in terms of purpose for myself because I feel like that's a little highfalutin for me. But my purpose, I would say, is about sort of efficiency. So you are the biggest thing you could do to me is sort of waste your life or waste your abilities or waste your gifts or whatever we're calling them, right? So we all know the story of the guy who's the funniest guy you know, but he's never made a penny doing comedy, you know, that guy who's a great musician, but he still has to work his daytime job and he's never been able to figure out a way to get paid to do that. So for me, I spent a very long period of my time not utilizing any of my comedic sensibilities or my mind or anything creative at all. I was just a carpenter. And although the carpentry, you know, got a little creative on occasion, but it was never what I wanted to do. And then later on, I got into the business. And for me, it's about not squandering the relatively short period of time you have to be productive and to kind of leave a mark without intentionally leaving a mark, but just say, like, did you write a book? Did you make a documentary? Are there things on the shelf you could point to, a box set or a documentary on Netflix or something? Not for monetary reasons, although that's a factor for sure, and not for sort of grandiose reasons, but just to say I had this potential. So I would think of myself as I'm 90% funny. I don't want to be 31% effective with my 90% funny. I'd like to be 80% effective with my 90% funny or creativity or what have you. I would like to do, I have an idea for a handful of documentaries. I don't want to go to my grave and not have made those documentaries.
You're putting a lot, you're really putting a premium on documentaries.
You're right.
Triple mention of documentaries.
I think it makes me sound smarter.
I wish you luck in that endeavor. Oh, you sound like a genius. We should try this exercise. So in the episode that we did, I didn't mean to reference the show, but in the Korea episode, we went to this place called a death cafe where you go in and you basically simulate your own death and you literally lay in a coffin for 10 minutes. And after we did it, they had us write out our own eulogies. And
by the way, Gavin Newsom said that's the only acceptable business that can stay open in Los Angeles. You may go eat outdoors in a coffin. Thank you.
Is everything
who
so
says
far?
We're unfriendly to business?
Right. Everything is 100% shut down.
By the way, our real estate, the realtor at this neighborhood we looked at today said that 60% of the people they've sold homes to are from California. And they said that some good people are just fucking angry.
It's such a funny thing. It's an interesting thing. We'll get to the death cafe in 1 second, it's interesting. So in the day, they would have the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, and all the people who are sitting in Wisconsin would see the beautiful sunny skies of Southern California in the Rose Bowl and people wearing T-shirts in January and go, we're moving to California. Now I'm sitting in California. I'm watching the game from Nashville. I see there's people in the stands of the stadium, and I'm like, we got to move to Nashville. There's literally human beings.
They all have coronavirus, though. There's nothing to like. It's not like there's a lot to envy in terms of that. Tennessee's killing it. But yeah, I agree. It's been whatever. I feel like you've probably spent 80% of your time
talking about this, but
it's, you're rounding down, but go ahead. The Death Cafe. Sorry.
It's just, yeah, it's upsetting the way they've handled closing of the business.
It's weird that you sit here and you go, I want to get a haircut or I want to go out to dinner. And you go, you can't, there's none of that. There's everything is closed.
It's hurt people's livelihoods more than a virus ever could. I mean, they should have just criminalized safety, but anyway, let's go back to the Death Cafe. Before we do that, I wanted to ask you, you talked about the transition from carpentry to stand up. Have you talked about that too much or is that a story you can share?
It's really been a while.
I would love to hear about how that happened. Like when you were a carpenter, were you one of those guys, you were a carpenter, but you were always telling people, yeah, I've got this thing I'm going to do. And
by not talk about material, you can read it for yourself.
Yeah, read the whole book. I didn't talk too much about what I was going to do with the other carpenters because, A, it's Los Angeles. Half of them don't speak English. It's number one. Number two, they didn't really get that part of the world.
It's funny you say it's Los Angeles because that could go the other way, which is it's Los Angeles. Everyone is planning on getting into this or writing a script or you know what I mean? Like everyone's going to take a stand-up comedy class or join an improv troupe.
It's definitely a trope with waiters slipping the script to Spielberg when he comes in to eat or bartenders or stuff like that. But carpenters, no. Right. I mean, that first off, if you're working as a carpenter on a job site, you've been in it for 10 years. Like you don't get to be a carpenter in 2 years, you know? So the guys I worked with were sort of long haulers and they were in it. They were in it, you know, as lifers.
Much care for your hot takes.
No,
I only meant that they had someone in their lives who's probably said that, you know what I mean? Some nephew or some something who was like, or uncle who's like, I'm going to sell this script. You know what I mean? There's someone in their lives who said that.
Yeah, surprisingly, not almost none of that conversation. Like you'd be surprised how many regular dudes are in Los Angeles. I mean, you have to go to a construction site to find those guys. But surprisingly, little talk about the business or anyone they knew, or they didn't go to college, and you know, whatever. Their dads were alcoholics. But yes, Ravi, sorry.
I wanted to know: did you have like an aha moment that Trent helped you make the transition? Like you weren't intending to get into this. So what was the moment where you decided to change?
I was, it was a simple equation. I did the math on my profession of carpentry and there's just a lot of things about it that weren't going to work big picture for me. And one of them was not getting paid for a day you didn't work. So if you didn't work, you didn't get paid. And I don't think people think much about that, but imagine Christmas would come around, you know, in my world, we'd take Christmas off, not get paid, but we'd come right back to work the next day or do a half day before Christmas and then take Christmas off. Nobody could afford not to get paid and you never got paid for days. You didn't work. And then if it would rain, the job site would get rained out. I didn't have insurance. I had no benefits. I was like, this can't, how would one buy a home? How would one raise a family? Like, I was like, this could never work. I have to figure out some job that's different than this job. So
stand up was the answer to all those problems.
I wasn't thinking about stand up. I was just thinking about something creative, something other than swinging a hammer. That was my thought. I got to do something else. I was never specific about what I was going to do. Just something different than this. I would
just wanted to try new things.
I would have worked at a greeting card place with guys writing funny greeting cards. I would have been perfectly content to do that. I had no thoughts about being in front of the camera or anything. I had fantasies about it, but I had no real practical thoughts about it.
I would buy the fuck out of the Corolla greeting card. I would love that greeting card.
Yeah. And I just said, I'm just going to go to, I'll just work at it. That was my whole thing. I have no, I have no expectations. I'll just work on comedy. That's all I thought.
How much are you doing it now? How often do you get up?
Well, the whole COVID thing has obviously whacked everything out. But as I was saying before you hopped on, I did 15 minutes on the West Side last night. We're going to Naples off the hook, by the way, this weekend. doing a live pod there and stand up. I'm doing dates. I'm doing a fair amount of stand up or whenever I can or whoever will take me. But and I was doing stand up at the Comedy Store and, you know, Laugh Factory and Ice House and all. I was going out all the time, and then COVID kind of shut everything down. But to me, it was just about not wasting whatever ability you may have. It's a potential thing. That's the saddest part for me, would be getting to the end of your life and going, I did not live up to my potential.
But that's most people. You realize most people, I think, have these aspirations or some expectation of what their life is going to be. And then, you know, at some point they have to reconcile that with the life that they have. Like, you know, just deciding, oh, I don't like being a carpenter and I need to do better than this. It doesn't lead to the life that you have. Like, in fact, a lot of people try to have a life you have and fall on their face. Or more often than not, people decide they want the life you have and still just stick with the thing that they're doing.
Well, but then there's this. There's ability. Like, we're talking about potential, right? So I knew that I had ability. I knew I was better than most. I knew I had the ability to do it.
I think you have to do any of these kinds of kind of outlier careers. You need to have a kind of call it a confidence. I think even it has to transcend, like it has to be arrogant, I think, in terms of your belief in yourself to even have the audacity to attempt this kind of shit, because it's abusive. The odds are constantly against you. And you're more often than not going to get dealt bad hands.
Well, and that's the thing, I think, like you said, I mean, it can be a crapshoot, but I've had, as we all have, I've had a million jobs and did them for a lot of years. And at least if it was my main source of income, I would do it, but knowing I was not meant to do what I was doing. You know, I was not meant to be a career retail person. I was not meant to, you know, I was doing the job and I was earning money and I had to do it for a long time, but I never felt like, you know what, I'm pretty good at this and I'm making pretty good money. I knew I am not supposed to be here. I'm in the wrong life.
Yeah. And how did you end up here? Is this the final destination for you?
We'll be honest. See.
The death cafe is her final destination.
Yeah. We're going to kill her after the show. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would like to be here for as long as I can and do other things that I want to explore, you know, at the same time, which we've been really fortunate to be able to do here. I do this and I do radio and I do all kinds of stuff. But I think when you're lucky, even though it feels like you're in hell, you're lucky enough to know when you're in the wrong place, when you're not meant to be doing what you're doing.
Oh, totally. It's a privilege to know it and to be able to pursue anything different. Because 99% of people don't have the privilege of being able to try new shit.
Yeah.
Well, what percentage of people think they have an ability that's outside of their sort of current employment or their career? And like, so it's an interesting thing. So we go, everyone's special, everyone's unique, everyone has a gift. But then you kind of look around and you're like, nah, it doesn't seem like everyone has a gift or everyone's unique or everyone's special. You know, I was doing carpentry and I realistically understood that I had the ability to do comedy. I didn't know if I was going to get paid for it, but I was like, this is not a pipe dream. I did not say I'm going to be in a band. I did not say I can sing. I didn't say I could dance. Like, I knew all the shit I couldn't do.
Well, let me ask you a question. Are you talking about the ability to do something at a professional level, like be a professional comedian or podcast host or whatever, or an ability just beyond what they are doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll give you an example. The one popped in my head is Christy's dad obviously owns the power tool shop. He has a power tool shop here in Los Angeles, makes good living. He's a great photographer. Now, could he be professional? I don't know, but he has the ability to take amazing photographs. And I imagine, geez, the one example, but I imagine there's a lot of people like that out there.
Yeah, well, so it's like, can you get paid? So you're working at a car rental place, Maybe you're the manager of a car rental place. Maybe you're doing okay. Maybe you've been doing it for 11 years and you have some vacation and some health benefits and things like that. Is the average person sitting around going, I have an ability to do something else and I would like to pursue it, or I'm too scared to pursue it? Like, do they have those thoughts? I don't think they do.
I think they do.
I do think they do.
But how come they don't pursue it then?
Because I think almost everyone, first of all, human nature is such that nobody is great at just one thing. So whether they think that or not, I feel like almost objectively you can say that everyone's probably better at more than just the thing that they're doing with their lives. And I think at some point, just because we're all by nature curious or stimulated by other things, at some point in your life, all of us have these, you know, thoughts of like, wouldn't that be nice? Should I do that? Can I do that? I think the vast majority of people don't have the capacity, and over time limit their capacity even more, to entertain those ideas and to take those risks. And then when they do that, take those risks, they decide success is, like, if you're a comedian, it's success is becoming a famous comedian and getting 1 hour special, instead of deciding success is just that you tried stand-up comedy.
Well, I definitely think everyone has ideas that they're nursing, ideas of doing other things. I'm really sort of asking, where the rubber meets the road is if you really believe that, then you act on it at some point.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a higher bar too. And the situation you described, Adam, is I think why a lot of people don't do that. When you're, you know, the manager at a car rental place and you have the insurance, you have kids and you have benefits, yeah. But that's impossible life to walk away from for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think that's where environment comes into play though. You know, depending on where you live and who you're surrounded by, there's different, I mean, you know, this is going to, we could get into politics about this, but there's certain kinds of people who value homogeny, who are spending their entire lives trying to fit in and essentially trying to be one person. And then there's other people who are, you know, kind of where creativity is really cultivated. They're environments where they're encouraged to be different and to figure out their own thing. Those people are obviously more likely to go off and try something and be willing to fall on their face.
What are you talking about?
That's my son. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, this sort of like, we put a lot of stock in the encouragement and the parents and that kind of stuff. I feel like it's a tie with me between the creative people I have, who half of them had encouraging parents and half of them didn't have encouraging parents. They ended up in the same place. Some were just, my parents didn't encourage me at all, and I just went and fucking did it anyway. And then others are like, my parents were very supportive and told me I could do anything I want. I think if it's a coin toss, you might as well support your fucking kids and not take any chances. But I don't even know if there's a direct line between a correlation between the parents who are supportive and told, my parents never told me jack shit. And I was just like, I'll just go do it. Jimmy Kimmel's parents were very supportive, but we both kind of ended up in the same place, you know?
I don't think it's just parents though. I mean, I think it's like,
yes,
I
agree.
What are the politics of your life? Like, what are the value systems that you've bought into? I think in adulthood, regardless of what your parents are, you've kind of decided if you're going to spend your whole life trying to like be one kind of person, or if you like really value, you know, any sort of entrepreneurial sensibility. I mean, we know those people. I think, you know, I tend to be really attracted to those people with entrepreneurial sensibilities because I'm one of those people. And so that perpetuates it even more.
When you dip, do you spit into a can or do you swallow it?
Fair question. Well, so this is the Copenhagen Mint pouch.
Oh,
so
the pouch.
This I can swallow.
1 week in Nashville.
Huh? You got your
one week
course
in Nashville,
can.
And I'm back. And
your
I'm
course
back.
Can. You got your dip.
Things, guys. I belong here. I'm usually a spitter though. I don't like to swallow if I can help it.
Amen.
Noted. All right. Yeah.
That was a layup. No, that was a
low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.